Okay, I welcome all of you for Sutta teaching session. We are discussing several suttas in this session. Basically, to understand Buddha's teaching as well as to get some support from it, especially for our practice. And so far, we have discussed several suttas. We started with Sabbasava Sutta, which is talking about the hidden tendencies or latent tendencies on which we are basically operating, and Buddha is showing various paths or various techniques, strategies to overcome them and to understand them. So we discussed this, and then we get on to Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, that is related to the elements, and there Buddha is giving various explanations about our whole experience, what we call as a person, a being, a man, a woman. Buddha is giving different views about that, and accordingly we have discussed different such understandings or such insights, and they are basically we ended up with understanding that going through the practice, one has to establish oneself in wisdom. And one has to be vigilant in that. One has to work hard on to develop that wisdom, and then one should recognize various insights, and those insights are to be considered as the true state rather than the typical transient impermanent state. And again, one has to relinquish what we call as I, me, mine. Those kind of inner traits one has to recognize and ignore, recognize and let go. And then one has to protect the peace of the mind, the tranquility, which is free from lust, free from hatred, and free from delusion. So we discuss a fair amount of practice-related suttas, and now we are discussing Mula Pariyaya Sutta, where Buddha is talking about the root of all things. A root of all things, where basically when we consider the whole thinking paradigm, how we perceive things, how we think about various things, what are the prejudices we have, and why we are thinking like that. So these kind of different viewpoints, these kind of various preconceived ideas are all related to some sort of thinking patterns among all of us. So therefore, Buddha analyzes this whole tendency to which all the people, not only the human, but even the celestial beings, even the Brahmas, and all the beings, all sentient beings, are included here. So in order to give a proper understanding, Buddha is taking 24 concepts. And those are actually representing various samples or cross sections of the whole society, of the whole universe. Taking earth element, water element, fire element, air element. So those are the most primary characteristics or most primary elements of the whole physical world. So he is taking those four and telling us what is the perspective about those to different people, various kinds of people. And then beings, there we can consider the hell beings and the human beings. So what is their understanding about various things? And then gods, various celestial beings, what is their sort of an understanding? And then who is the creator god of the universe? That is according to the belief of the Brahmins. So they consider Prajapati, the Brahma, is the creator god. So how one perceives that Brahman. So what is the concept he has? What's the idea? What is the view someone has about this Pajapati? And then various Brahma realms. There are 16 material Brahma realms, and according to the strength of the jhana, so one may be reborn in various Brahma realms. And how one may perceive about those Brahma realms. So that is discussed later. And after that, what are the immaterial Brahma realms? So there are Arupa Brahma realms. And what is the perception about those Arupa Brahma realms? Arupa Brahma realms in a person's mind. And then seen, heard, sensed, cognized. So this is how our five faculties are, the six faculties are basically dealing with the outside. And how one perceive when something is seen, when something is heard, when something is sensed, and when a mental construct or when a mental object appearing in the mind, how one may be cognized that. So that is in a way another way of looking at the whole experience according to Ditta, Sutta, Mutta and Vinyata. That is seen, heard, sensed and cognized. And then there are certain other beliefs that one has a self, maybe a kind of a small self, and that self will be united with the larger self, the big self. So that is one belief among the Brahmins and most of the, say, religions who they consider a creator god. So there is this kind of a belief, and therefore this unity and the diversity and the all are certain concepts come into the picture because of these various beliefs. And what is the perspective, what is the idea about those beliefs in a typical person? And then even the Nibbana. How a person may perceive about a Nibbana. So what is his idea about Nibbana? Is it a place? Is it a celestial sort of realm or whatever it is? So likewise, Buddha is taking cross-section of many different aspects in the whole universe, and on those aspects, on those experiences, what is the different views in different people's mind. So there Buddha is taking mainly four people. First, he considers the typical untaught ordinary worldly being. So he has never heard Buddha's teaching, he has never thought of any spiritual sort of a paradigm, and he simply is a sensual pressure bound person. He's always looking after some sensual pressure and always trying to get rid of whatever the sufferings, whatever the pain coming on his way. So likewise, he has his own sort of a typical worldly nature, and what is his view about this whole universe. And then Buddha is taking a person who is in higher training. So that is what we need to discuss today. We have to discuss today because we have covered the view of the first person. That is the view of a typical person, an untaught ordinary person, how he perceives something. So basically, he is with the idea that things are permanent, things may last for a long time, and you can find satisfaction, you can find happiness through various outside sources, and there's a self within, maybe within the body, or the body is encompassed by a self or something like that. There's a kind of an ongoing self view, and with those preconceived ideas, he is now trying to understand this whole experience. And therefore, he is in a sort of a confused mind. He is in an entangled mind. So he can simply perceive something according to the typical norms. Say, for example, in this situation, I have taken an example of a person seeing a chair. So he immediately recognized this is as a chair. It's not a bad thing. I mean, in a way, this is the correct recognition. He hasn't mistaken it to a table, or he hasn't mistaken it to a sort of a vehicle, but he properly recognized this as a chair. So in mundane terms, it is true, it is correct. And then he has sort of a relationship building up with this chair. Now he thinks, I am seeing a chair. So this chair is a good chair. This chair is an expensive chair. I want to have this chair. I like that chair. Or on the other hand, this inferior chair, it may break quickly. Or I should never buy this kind of a chair. Or this kind of a, I mean, many different views may arise in his mind. So therefore, he is having kind of a subject-object relationship. And he consider that I am here. And while being here, I see an outside chair. So he has this kind of a relationship. According to his own views, he has some conditioned relationship with this chair. So now this is simple example. Similarly, we can go for any other material objects or even any other, say, gods, celestial beings, or even Brahmas, Arupa Brahmas, where this person may have read books or heard a Dhamma sermon or heard from someone else. So he has some sort of ideas already available in his mind. So according to those preconceived ideas, so he's thinking, he's conceiving. He's always putting kind of an I into the picture, and I am understanding about him. I am understanding about this. I am understanding about that. So I better say be afraid of the devil. I better offer some flowers to the devil. Or I first I may buy a chair. I may should go to some place to look at something. So likewise, he always interpret all his experience using a preconceived idea that there is an I here. There is a person here. I am experiencing. So this I notion is everywhere included in his whole experience, whole thinking, and all reaction. Now, so this is the typical experience. So Buddha says, why he is thinking like this? Why he is behaving like this? Because he hasn't understood the whole thing. He hasn't understood the whole picture. So his mind is fairly conditioned, and as a result, he is looking at things according to that frame, according to that conditioned mind. So he hasn't have the capacity to look at out of the picture, out of that bound, out of the box. He can't, and he is simply fairly conditioned and restricted to that his narrow thinking, and as a result, his perception is colored. Now we can discuss the other part, that is where how a disciple who is in higher training. Now suppose there is a person who has heard Buddha's teaching, and he understood there is something there to practically understand. So just the superficial knowledge is not enough. I have heard some Dhamma. So I have read several books. So why not I really try to give it a try? Why not I really try to get a sort of a practical understanding about this? Kind of a self-realization. Kind of my own realization about this teaching. So this teaching appears really rational, fairly wise. And there are other people who are sort of recognize this teaching, has given due recognition to this Buddha's teaching. So why not I also try to recognize it? Or why not I also try to practice it and live according to it? And then I may be able to understand what Buddha is talking. So now he is trying to practice. So this is how a practitioner comes into the picture. Now he may start with basic mindfulness practices. So rather than trying to go for any kind of dogmatic, very confusing or very complicated thinking, he's now trying to simplify his whole experience. Because he understood now the whole world is communicating according to the man-made, say, concepts. Fairly living in a conceptual world. So I should penetrate this. I should have a different way of looking at things. So why not I practice according to the Buddha's teaching? Now, rather than he himself trying to find out his way, now Buddha has preached a certain path. Buddha has taught kind of a methodology. So now he is trying to practice according to that methodology, according to that strategy. Now, there, he first of all try to be mindful. So basically, he understands that his mind constantly proliferate about the past, regret about the past, has various ideas about others based on their sort of a relationship with me in the past. Oh, I have various sort of projections about the future, various uncertainties about the future, various plans about the future. So this is how my mind is fairly sort of subjected to. So how about being in the present? I never have been in the present. So how can I come to the present? What is the present experience? Now he is trying to take his mind to the present experience. Right now, my body is sitting. Can I perceive the body in this sitting posture? Maybe now the body is walking. Can I be with this simple walking posture? Now the body is lying down. Can I be with this lying down posture? Now the body is standing. Can I be with this standing posture? So likewise, he is using his own body to come back to the present moment. So this is kind of an eye-opening. Because so far he is living in a mind-made world, kind of a dream world. Now he is trying to come out of that dream world and to live in the present moment and to live in the reality. So this reality is still not the sort of a very refined or very perfect reality, but at least it is not something mind-made. It is not something entirely kind of an imagined world. But at least it is something he is really experiencing at this very moment. So using his own mind, sorry, using his own body, now he is trying to come back time to time to this world. Now, if he is continuing this practice, now the frequency may increase. Now, previously, suppose he is doing while he's walking, he could only come to the reality or to experience the reality only 10 moments. But later, as because of his dedication, suppose he's continuing his practice, now he can be in the reality for say 20 moments, then 50 moments, 100 moments, 200 moments. So likewise, more and more instances he is now coming to be in the present moment. He's experiencing the present moment. More and more he is establishing mindfulness in the present moment. Now, as he experienced mindfulness, as he was able to establish mindfulness, now kind of an opening happens in his mind where rather than thinking about something, rather than sort of imagining about something, now he is trying to directly experience something. Sometimes we call it as abhinya, where some now give emphasis to this direct experience, rather than the conceptual experience, rather than building up upon the experience. Now he is trying to be with this normal, very fundamental experience, very basic level of experience without building up upon it, without constructing upon it. So he is trying to keep this very simple, fundamental, basic level of experience as it is, without constructing on it. Without forming on it, without allowing the mind to make a story on it. So he is trying to keep the mind fairly quiet and trying to directly connect with this very fundamental level of experience. So this is another paradigm shift in his mind, in his life, because so far he couldn't stop there. Rather, immediately once he experienced something in this moment, he started to think about it. He started to proliferate about it. He started to shift to an entirely different world from that experience. Now he lost this world, now again in the dream world, again in the mind-made world. In order to avoid shifting to this mind-made world, now again and again he is coming back to the present moment. Whenever mind drifts to the outside, whenever mind distracts outside, he mindfully take it back. Again, mind drifts to the outside. Again, he mindfully take it back. So likewise, it's a sort of a struggle at the beginning because mind has never trained to be in the present moment. So without giving up, so he is continuing his practice. Now, after a while, mind starts to stay in the present moment. Now, suppose he is doing some mindful walking. There, his mind stays more and more with the mindful walking. With the walking. So basically the bodily experience and the mental experience become harmonized or become fairly synchronized. So there's a bodily experience happened right at this moment, and the mind also experiences the same thing. Without going into the past or without going to the future, mind also well synchronized, well harmonized with the present experience. Now this is where he is now trying to further develop. Suppose now he is able to establish mindfulness, now his mind is not wavering, fairly concentrated on the present experience. Now Buddha does not stop there. He asks us to carefully observe really what is going on, to really investigate the present moment experience. So this is where the wisdom comes to the picture. So now this yogi, this practitioner, is fairly trying to observe the reality, trying to examine the reality, investigate the reality. So as a result of this continuous investigation, his mindfulness further refines and the clear comprehension further improves. And as a result, various insights are possible. So he may understand this is not something kind of one component or one object, but this is kind of a made-up thing. This is sort of an assembly of various things. Say, for example, now he is looking at the chair. Now, when he is looking at the chair, he understands this is, even though I typically recognize it as a chair, it is a sort of a made-up thing. It was made with various wooden blocks, and there are maybe other plastics or other cushion or etc., nails, and various other components are used in order to make this chair. Then we call it a chair. There is no real chair. Now his mind entirely changed. Say, for example, if we consider a vehicle, if we take four wheels, rims, engine, a body, steering wheel, gearbox, maybe the petrol, seats, etc. So we take all these various components and we assemble them in a particular fashion, in a particular style. And then it has the capacity to move once we ignite, once we supply the petrol, and then it starts to move. So then we call it a vehicle, a car, a bus. So accordingly we can understand it's a kind of a accumulation of various components. It is not something, a one unit, but rather it is made up with so many small components. So the previous compactness view is now going to be break, now going to be broken, and he has a kind of a assembly view. It's a kind of a accumulation of view. Now everything is sort of an accumulation. Everything is sort of an aggregate. Everything is sort of an assembly, not a single unit. Now even this chair is something like that. So this chair is also a combination of various wooden parts, wooden blocks, and they were fixed together using various nails, and maybe the sitting part is fairly covered by a cushion. So likewise, we understand these various components, and once they come together, we call it a chair. Now this is the way his mind is growing in the insights. Now he has this kind of an insight. So this is one way, fairly mature insight, when compared to the typical worldly beings' perspective, worldly beings' perception. So he immediately takes this as a chair. I need it, I love it, I want to have it, etc. But the trainee actually have recognized this as a chair, but he now has a further understanding about this chair. This chair is not a single thing. It's a kind of a assembly of various components. And then we call it a chair. It's a concept that we call it a chair. Now his mind has fairly changed. Now, according to the same situation, same scenario, we can look at various other things. Suppose he is looking at the tea. When he talks about the cup of tea. So what is this cup of tea? The hot water is there. Then it is included in a cup. That cup is also made up with, say, porcelain. And the tea is added with the sort of this tea powder. So likewise, there are various combination of various ingredients, and ultimately we call it a cup of tea. There is no a real essence here, but it's a kind of a combination of various ingredients. So likewise, he can understand many different other experiences according to this view. Now he is breaking his compactness view. So this is one part of our practice. So when we consider something as a unit, as a thing, a single thing, then we easily get caught up with a personality view. We easily get caught up with a compactness. We easily consider he is a man, she is a woman, it is a dog. So likewise, we typically refer our words, sentences, communication, and we recognize them as single thing, something existing. But if we little penetrate this view, there we can understand it's a kind of a combination of various components, maybe various bodily parts. And as a result, we call or we give it a name as a man, as a woman, as a dog, as a cat, as a snake. So likewise, different names are given just for the communication. So these are the language coming to the picture. These are the concepts coming to the picture. And now, suppose he is further continuing his practice. Now he is trying to further scrutinize the experience. Now he understood now this so-called, say, patavidhatu, the earth element, is not a kind of a single thing. It's a combination of so many components. Now he is trying to further analyze or further scrutinize this whole experience. Suppose he is taking dhatu manasikara, the other elements related practice, and he is making a walking session, mindful walking, and there the mind is well established on the walking, and there when he is experiencing various earth characteristics, say stiffness, hardness, softness, heaviness, lightness, etc. Now he is trying to recognize them into that basic level, using those fundamental levels. He is not trying to make a story out of that, make a concept out of that. Now he is limiting or he is restraining himself to this very fundamental basic understanding. So his whole view is now fairly simplified, fairly refined, and as a result he may understand. So on top of this fundamental experience we are building up, we are constructing. How about if we stop this construction? How about if we leave aside this construction? How about if we simply experience the fundamental characteristics? Now he's trying to experience this fundamental characteristics. Now the whole experience, say when he's doing mindful walking, so his legs are touching the ground. Now he can recognize the stiffness, stiffness as stiffness, hardness as hardness, softness as softness. Say, if we go to the other elements, say the dryness as dryness, or heat as heat, cold as cold, movement or motion as the motion, vibration as vibration. So likewise, very fundamental level experience he is trying to now recognize. So more and more he try to recognize those fundamental experiences, element characteristics, he may understand this whole body is nothing but these kind of various characteristics. And not only that, even the outside is a complete manifestation of these four elements. And we, for the easiness of communication, for the comfort of communication, we have given various names. And there we have sort of trapped. So how can I sort of come out of this trap? and be in the very fundamental level of experience without trying to proliferate on that. Now he is trying to develop this kind of an understanding. And this is where actually the path coming to the situation where now he is developing this as a way of life. So he can't stop this whole thing immediately because the typical habitual proliferation is so powerful. Now he is again and again trying to restrain himself. So this is what I am trying to interpret here in this picture. Now this yogi is now perceiving the chair, but he may have very many ideas about it because he also has some preconditioning, and the mind may tempt to do such sort of proliferation. Now he is restraining himself. He says he should not conceive himself as earth. Now, when mind is trying to conceive, now he is trying to restrain himself, so don't do that. So this is not the reality. This is a kind of a preconceived idea. This is a kind of a convention. This is a kind of a concept. So likewise, he is restraining himself. He is again and again reminding the reality to himself. Because more and more the insights are also supporting his proper understanding. So more he associates those insights, a lot of wisdom is pumping to him. And as a result, whenever habitually his mind grasps, now he is trying to restrain the mind, telling, don't do it. Now this is a trap. This is a kind of a proliferation. This is a kind of a conceiving. So likewise, he is trying to avoid this conceiving. And suppose he is continuing his practice, and time to time, he can even experience kind of a resting period or the absence of conceiving, absence of proliferation. So his mind is fairly quiet, fairly clear, very simple, free from any concepts, free from conventions, not trapped in various conventions. And he can experience the peace of mind. He can experience the stillness of mind. So there he gets more and more wisdom, more and more understanding about things. Now his stillness of mind, clarity of mind, simplicity of mind, spaciousness of the mind helps to further strengthen his right view. But still, because of the habitual tendencies, again and again, his mind may drift and try to again trapped in the typical conceptual way of thinking. But he restrains himself. He again and again restrains himself. He says, okay, patavito mamanyi, patavi meti mamanyi. So likewise, he is giving a sort of a kind of a advising himself, instructing himself, don't do it. Come back to the present moment. Don't go to the past. Don't just proliferate about the past. Don't just imagine about the future. Don't just lost in the experience. Just try to be mindful. So likewise, again and again, he's sort of advising himself. So this becomes his kind of a practice. This is the training. This is how he's training himself. And suppose his whole experience further continues, his practice further continues, and he may now understand, as I said, certain restful periods, sort of absence of concepts, absence of proliferation, absence of thinking. And he may even understand, so this mind can stay still. This mind can stay quiet. This mind having thoughts is not essential. There's a whole way of experiencing, whole way of awareness, without thoughts, without constructs, without mental formations. So the mind is quiet, mind is peaceful, mind is clear, without formation, without mental constructs. And he may understand whatever the physical components or whatever the physical phenomena have the nature of arising and passing away. They come and go. they come into the picture due to various causes, and momentarily they pass away. And similarly, there are various feelings. They arise due to causes, and instantly they pass away. Similarly, there are various perceptions. Due to various causes, they come into the picture and they immediately pass away. And due to various tendencies, various habits we construct in the mind, mental formations, verbal formations, or various formations come into the picture. And once we stop this construction, then they too pass away. So all the other knowing part or the cognition part, that also happens again and again, but that is also momentary. They also arise and pass away. So there are various insights are now arising in his mind. So wisdom is further developed. And if it is coming to more developed or to its culmination, so there are possibilities that the mind become utterly free, extremely free from all the grasping, of all the holdings. Because the mind holds things when he thinks, when he perceives that, oh, here I am referring he as to the mind, when the mind holds things, when it perceives that it is good, it is sort of permanent, it is pleasurable, and it has some inner core, inner essence. But when it understands there is no core here, everything happens due to various causes and conditions, not in the control of oneself, and can't find lasting happiness here, and again is so transient, so there is no necessity of holding it, no necessity of grasping it. So as a result, the letting go starts to happen, relinquishment starts to happen. So when the relinquishment has happened, the mind becomes more free. More and more wisdom is there, more and more letting go is there. So mind may experience complete sort of a freedom. That also may be sort of temporary, because still the fetters are available, asava anusaya is still available. So therefore, once they again come into the picture, again mind go and grasp. But at least for limited time, at least for short time, this yogi now experience complete freedom of mind. Now, when those kind of insights are coming to the picture more and more, so his understanding further developed, and his realization further strengthened, and as a result, he now can recognize very clearly how mind go and grasp. What is the perception about various other things? Now we can take various other experiences or various these other components to the picture, other concepts to the picture. Now suppose he is thinking about various gods. Suppose you are believing in a god. In Sri Lanka, there are many gods. Kataragama god, Vishnu god, and many different gods are there. Those have come from various other beliefs. So people have various perceptions about these gods. So when this trainee is considering his mind, so he may understand this is a kind of a perception. This kind of a view I have based on the various cultural conditioning. So why not I free my mind from these constructs? Why not I simply keep the mind very simple without these beliefs? Now he is fairly cleansing his mind. He is directing his mind. And he has the clear understanding about the Buddha's teaching. And he gives more prominence to that Buddha's teaching. He is not afraid of sort of discarding various traditional or conventional way of thinking, because he has now fair confidence of the Buddha's teaching. Because he has himself experienced the clarity of mind. He himself has experienced the stillness of mind. Complete freedom of constructs. Complete freedom of concepts. He has experienced by himself. So more and more this mindfulness practice really show him the path. So that is why in the Satipatthana Sutta, where Buddha mentioned, if one properly practice Satipatthana, one result is the clear understanding of the path.
clear understanding of the Noble Eightfold Path.
So he understands, okay, this is the path to go. This is the way of practice. This is the correct way of practice. So more and more, his practice become confident. So he doesn't want to ask from someone to get a certification. Rather, his own practice is giving enough confidence that he's going in the correct path. And when it comes to, say, various other concepts, so how about various Arupa world? So he may understand, I mean, this may be possible by going through various, Arupa jhana. And that is also a temporary conditioning of the mind. So you are trying to condition the mind using an absorption, and till the strength of that absorption is available, so the mind may stay in that world. But after that, again may come back to the lower realms. So this yogi, this trainee, is now fairly sort of broadening his understanding about various concepts. And he is not grasping even these subtle constructs, even these subtle concepts. Because at the beginning, as a typical mundane person, his mind has grasped, say, the typical worldly things, say, chair as a chair, table as a table. And then his view changed. This chair is a conditioned component, or kind of a constructed furniture, or it's a kind of assembly of various parts, components. Now he has sort of penetrated that compactness view. And further, when he sort of understanding or developing various insights, he may understand this is something made up with this earth element. The majority is earth element. So they have the nature to arise and pass away. So his understanding is further improved. As a result, his mind stop grasping, stop sort of holding things, stop clinging to things. Now though he sees a chair, he can leave it aside. Rather than having a second thought about it, he can recognize this as a chair in a conventional level if it is necessary, or in a more penetrative level if it is necessary. And his mind is unshakable. His mind becomes more detached from this whole experience, and he may see things, but he can stop seeing as at the scene. He may hear things, and he can stop hearing what is heard onto that level without making a story out of what is heard. He may sense various things, and he can still stop at the level of sensed. Various thoughts may come into the mind, and he can recognize those as merely thoughts without constructing upon them, without proliferating upon them, without allowing the mind to be caught up with those thoughts. So the thoughts may not last for a long time, but thoughts may fade away fairly quickly, and more his mind stay in the sort of a stillness. More and more the mind may stay in a quietude and free from inner chatter, free from proliferation. So likewise, his mind is further growing. And then if we consider the last concept, what is Nibbana? So how a trainee may recognize Nibbana? So this is an interesting question. Now, a worldling may have one idea or different ideas about Nibbana. So Nibbana is something beautiful. I may attain Nibbana after the death. I have to do various meritorious deeds to attain Nibbana. So Buddha has attained Nibbana. Arahants have attained Nibbana. They may be there. I also can join with them. So there are maybe so many views about Nibbana. On the other hand, if we consider a practitioner, he too might have started his practice according to these type of various thoughts, various concepts. But later, more and more, his view about Nibbana also may start to refine. So more his clear view, more his right view is improved. Accordingly, the view about Nibbana also
going to be changed. It is not the Nibbana that we thought at the beginning of our practice may be available after, say, 1 year of practice. So his idea or his understanding about Nibbana has changed. And after another year of practice, his understanding about Nibbana has again changed. So the goal about his practice, the whole objective about his practice also going to change, going to mature. So therefore, so the understanding or the view about Nibbana in a trainee, in a Seka Puggala, also is quite different, maybe quite different from a typical worldly person. So I think with that, I can conclude today's teaching. So I now like to open the session for questions. So because these are fairly interesting subjects we are talking today. So if you have any question related to today's teaching, or if you want to clarify any other doubts, so I welcome that and open the session for questions.